It can only be Millennial. And now here is your host, Millennial Woes.
Hello, and welcome back to Millennial X. And I'm sorry for the late start, but I am now here with Mark from Herd Immunity News. Mark, welcome to Millennial.
Well, thank you very much for inviting me on to famous Millennial. I have been a fan of yours, I will confess, since 2019, Colin. And it's unique. It's fantastic. It is very eclectic. You bring in all these different people from the dissident right or the noble right. And it's great to be on with you in your 10-year anniversary show. So thank you.
Thank you very much. I do like it to be eclectic. I'd like it to be more eclectic, but the thing is, it's difficult. Certainly anyone on the left would never come on, and it's a shame, except for that one occasion, the Antifa professor who came on, but that's a long time ago. They're generally very insular. They don't like interacting with us, which is a shame. But the other thing is, of course, Millennial is not debating. So it's not combative. You know, it's very it's communal. That's the whole point of it. So I like to bring people on who, especially who haven't appeared before. I think it's important to introduce new people. And sometimes, as in your case, I feel like I should have had them on before, but it was just for whatever logistical reason it didn't happen. So I wish I'd had you on last year, but I'm sorry about that. Yeah. But anyway, why don't you introduce yourself to the audience?
Yes, with pleasure. I probably best to start from my political career. And that began in UKIP. Like so many people, I was hacked off completely with the way the UK was being run into the ground by the European Union, by being under the jackboot of the European Union. So I had moved, after university, I'd moved down to London. And obviously, you're a fellow Scot. Your eyes are opened when you move from a small Scottish town into a city like London to see the tragedy that can befall a great city when it gets into the wrong hands. So I joined UKIP, put my shoulder to the wheel to get the United Kingdom out of the European Union. That moved along to joining the Brexit Party, and I was a candidate in the 2019 election for the Brexit Party up in Scotland to an area you know very well, sir. And that was a fantastic experience because you could actually take people on the hustings, you know, so you had the punters. And I was in SNP country. That, you know, the places that I were going into were tiny little Scottish towns and town halls. No police protection or nothing. There was maybe 300 people waiting for me outside. And it was a great experience. And when you meet a lot of these people outside and you have a one-on-one, perfectly charming, perfectly charming. And it was a lot of fun. And on the back of that, so 2019, we're heading into December, getting to January. And all the festivities, I know you were in London for the Brexit festivities in 2020.
Yeah, I was. It was right immediately before COVID. And it was, I remember. How do you know that I was there? Did I post something?
Well, we have, at Herd Immunity News here, we have the best resources known to man.
I saw you
with a little balloon.
And you said
something along the lines of, "Let's go Brexit," and a little thing.
I'd forgotten all about that.
Yeah, yeah. You've actually probably been a bit of a clairvoyant because you popped the bloody balloon.
Yeah. Well, that was a strange moment where Brexit had it happened. And yet it like 4 years earlier at that point, but it kept drifting on and on. And then I think it was the last day of January 2020, something like that. It was around then. And then it happened. And yes, I was in London and I met a couple of, I met Sargon, he was there. It was all this big thing in, what's it called? Westminster, Parliament Square. So yeah, I was there. But what were you going to say about it? After it happened, it was a bit of a downer.
I think the writing was on the wall, Colin, when Boris Johnson couldn't even get Big Ben to bong. At the point in time, he thought, well, maybe this man doesn't have much power at all. But there was a wave of hope and euphoria as we went into 2020. People in the political circles that I ran in at the time were talking about the roaring 20s that we saw in America, where people were partying and decadence was everywhere. There was going to be a renaissance in music and it's going to be wonderful. And then out of nowhere comes the COVID-19 virus and the whole episode of the COVID era. And,
you know, it's funny you'd mention that because I'd forgotten that as well, that indeed there was this sense of possibility, a new decade. I remember people talking about the roaring 20s. It's going to be exciting and all that. And then immediately, as you say, it was just deflated. So you take it up again. Sorry.
No, you're absolutely right. And when word came out about the virus, the COVID-19 virus, remember originally Boris was out there shaking hands with people. He was talking about herd immunity. The thing that's kept us alive as a species to this present day, herd immunity, learned immunity, acquired immunity. Now, we went very quickly, didn't we, from that to, oh dear, this is going to have fatal consequences on everyone. When Boris Johnson went there with his henchmen, Dumb and Dumber, from Sage, the witty in Valence. And I just thought, no, this isn't right. And really, to put the icing on the cake, was the BBC said this was very dangerous and deadly. So as most of your viewers and listeners will know, whatever the BBC says, turn it around and you'll be closer to the truth than anything else.
Certainly. That was the tenor of the time. And indeed, it did change. I remember was there not something about hug a Chinaman? But I don't know if they used that term exactly. It seems unlikely. But
I think Boris did say there was not a China woman. I don't think it was hug.
Right.
It sounded like hug. But
there was something at the time about don't be afraid, it's all okay. Don't be racist against the Chinese. They're not going to kill you. Yeah. They're not going to be that infectious. And then over the course of about a week or 2 weeks, it just transformed and, right, we've got to go into lockdown very quickly.
Absolutely. And we went from lockdown to the shutdown of services and resources and businesses. And I just saw from a bit of a business background, I said, this is absolute insanity. Now, I had seen something like this before in 2009. I was in Australia. I was in Brisbane during the H1N1 outbreak, which was an attempt to get this going early. And I must be honest with you, I have never been more ill in my life with the virus that I got then. Basically, the sweat you could just wipe off your arm and off your body. And you were told, sorry, we can't do anything for you. So I had kind of seen a little bit of this before. And then the investigative journalist side of me started to look at who was who was running the show, because it wasn't Boris. I mean, let's be honest about it. He struggles at the best of times to get the words off the page out to the audience, but he's a great buffoon. And there were people like Paula Venables. Paula Venables was later to become known for the Postmaster scandal. There was people like Nick Ross of Crime Watch. Some of your viewers and listeners outside the UK might not know. This is the man that changed his British passport to a German one because he was so disgusted at the results of Brexit. So you could see, and then Neil Ferguson, Professor Shagger Ferguson, if I can say it at this time of night. Just the most inept people. You remember Ferguson's monumental cock-up when he said that 150 million people were going to die from bird flu, and it was like 300 people. So
He's got a reputation for doing this. He's the guy that governments go to when they want scary statistics.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And it was, you looked at the experts, and they moved on to SAGE, and they were all behavioural people. They were all 77th Brigaders. The disinformation, malinformation, misinformation specialist.
The woman who was in charge of SAGE was a card, I'm sure she was a card-carrying communist. There was something where...
Yeah,
I'm sure this came up that she was actually a member of the Communist Party, or at least had been. And she was, I remember her being questioned on it, and she just didn't care to answer. I mean, so blasé, you know. They just, no, I'm not going to talk about that.
Yeah, and it was amazing how quickly, as Dr. Robert Malone describes this, the medical world jumped on board with these incredible assertions that your own acquired immunity was no longer a thing, that these viruses could even be controlled with masks that were, that the holes in the masks were 5,000 times bigger than the COVID particles themselves. And then we got onto the just lunacy from people like Nicola Sturgeon chopping doors in half to stop the spread of an airborne virus. I mean, it was sick, it was sad, and people like me, I'm a dissenter. I'm probably just contemptuous of all politicians, to be honest with you, Colin. Having met them and rubbed shoulders with them and spoken to them, there are a couple of good ones, but not many. So you could see that this was more than a virus. It was about the control mechanisms that we'd read about for years. So during the middle of it, I said, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to create my own channel called Herd Immunity. And last year I started to interview people predominantly on things like the COVID vaccine, net zero, mass immigration's a favourite topic of mine, mass deportations. And I wanted to meet these characters like Andrew Bridgen on the vaccine front. Probably no one's done more than any British politician than Andrew. And it was a pleasure to have him on the show. And then the other subjects that I'm interested in, without jumping around too much, but just to give your viewers an idea of how I got involved, was talking to people from the right, that the actual right, not just the Conservatives in name only. I even joined the Conservatives. I did it more as an investigative researcher thing, just to see if it was as bad as people made out. And I don't know if you've got a nice disguise in your collection, Colin, if you could maybe put on a blonde wig a la Isla Bryson.
Well, no, I'm afraid not.
Get yourself in there, because it really is as bad as they say at these Conservative meetings. You think, what planet are you people on? You're talking to a room full of Lib Dems. But anyway, I got on to interviewing, went to the reform conferences, got to very, very quickly meet politicians. And in this age that we have now, where you can go from basically nothing to putting yourself out there with a little bit of confidence and an interest in politics, you can quite quickly meet some of the political leaders in the UK. So it was an interesting thing that's still going. Obviously, we're still growing the channel. We're meeting people from all sorts of right-wing backgrounds, because this is actual diversity. This is a point I want to bring up to you, is how diverse do you have to be to qualify as diversity? Diversity to me might be a Scotsman, an Englishman, an Irishman, and a Welshman. But no, that's not good enough. I have to go to this from someone from Somalia. I have to go to someone who believes they're a woman, but they're actually a man. I have to go to someone who I have absolutely no interest in whatsoever. So, like you, I'm interested in people. I'm interested in all these themes. But I don't know if you've noticed this. There are so many factions and fractions within the British right wing or centre right wing.
Do you mean the mainstream normie right, or do you mean our, like, the dissident right?
All of them.
I mean, certainly people can disagree over many, many different things. I would certainly agree with you on that. And it's very fractious. And I try to discourage that. I always try to emphasize that we have a common enemy, and we can disagree about the small things afterwards. We can sort that out later. For now, we need to be unified. It's like herding cats.
Yeah, it is like herding cats. Right now, there's a spat, obviously, with the Tommy Robinson thing. But the Tommy Robinson thing's been a spat for many, many years. I spoke to Gerard Batten, the former leader of UKIP, and it was actually at the last gala dinner event that Nigel Farage attended. And that was the wedge between the groups, which is still there to this day. And you could hear it with some of the stuff that Richard Tice was saying about the crowds that gathered in London during the United Kingdom movement, where he referred to them as that lot. You could hear it from Nigel when Steve Edgington was interviewing him, and he didn't want to talk about mass deportations. I've had Nick Tenconi, the leader of UKIP, on my channel because Nick's a very impressive young man. He's actually out on the streets with the bullhorn confronting Antifa, which is something that you and I probably wouldn't have thought possible, that a leader of a political party would have done this 3 or 4 years ago. But the Overton window is definitely shifting.
I think that it's the left. Antifa have been aggressive for a very long time. And I think that part of being a politician now on the right is that you have to contend with that. You have to, that is part of it, especially if you're saying anything. I mean, anything out of the ordinary, anything at all, because Antifa are the shock troops of the establishment. And this is a weird thing that they really just back up whatever the regime is pushing. I'm still amazed at this. I've always been amazed. I always will be amazed at this. How can they tell themselves that they're the underdog or that they're rebels in any way whatsoever, when they agree with Pepsi Cola, they agree with Microsoft, they agree with the government, they agree with every university department, every NGO, everything is on their side. But that means that for anyone who's opposing any aspect of that, you can expect Antifa to come for you. It's a whole thing. Is there anything you'd like to say about that?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I would probably meet those types on the hustings during the 2019 campaign. I haven't come across them in this sort of sphere that I'm in now of right-wing political analysts, right-wing podcasters. I'm doing interviews with people that I find fascinating and interesting from all walks of life. But obviously, I have a right-wing political view of the world and my country. And I met them at uni. I met them at university. And they were just the same sort of people that you meet in all walks of life, the kind of emos we used to call them. That probably shows my age. You remember emos? They were very unpopular. They wouldn't know a good time if it sat in their lap. They were very, like the Keir Starmers, like now. Let's get on to Keir Starmer and his cabinet. They're absolutely devoid of any humanity, warmth, sense of humour, irony. And you look back at the old left, even that Tony Benn could crack a joke. David Blunkett was quite funny. John Prescott had a sense of humour when he was knocking people out through eggs at him. It was fantastic. And even watch Question Time. It was a fantastic show in the late 90s, just after Blair came in. Rory Bremner as well was doing fantastic shows with Bird and Fortune, the Johns.
Yeah, John Bird and John. Yeah, it was good. I remember it at the time. And that was the era of Have I Got News For You, and it was at its peak as well. It was, you know, it was fun, especially if you were on, as I was, if you were, you know, on the centre left. You could feel smug. I think many people got in on that in the late 90s.
But it's gone hand in hand with so much cultural decline. And I call it cultural genocide. Because if you look at the United Nations definition of a cultural genocide. It's what's happening right now. We were talking earlier on about a Scottish town that we know very well and the renaming of a pub that actually brought together people from across the political spectrum, because it was the one time that they actually thought the SNP would be sticking up for the values of Scotland and historic Scottish names and terms and streets. But again, the hypocrisy that you spoke of earlier is unbelievable. You ever want to get a greenie? You ever want to smash a greenie to bits in a debate? Just say, do you use plastic? Where can they go from there? Fossil fuel base. They've got absolutely nowhere to go. And they've shut down.
Well, completely. This is the thing with the SNP. I don't know. I mean, obviously, they're... Well, the point is, they're not up for maintaining the Scottish culture because they're a pro-multiculturalism. They're not up for maintaining the Scottish ethnicity because they're pro-mass immigration. And they're not even up for maintaining Scottish sovereignty because they want to join the EU. They want to take Scotland into the EU, or at least they've certainly voiced that in the past. So you've got to wonder what is it about Scotland that they actually value at all? What is it that they want to preserve? It's a very strange party, at this, especially now.
Well, you can never underestimate how thick some people are. And I say that kindly and nicely and gently. Obviously, I mean, when you are, you've laid it out perfectly. How can you be opposed to all these things? Independence, for example, how can you be independent if you're part of the European Union? How can you be pro-Scottish workers when you want to import all the workers? And most of them aren't working anyway. We're constantly seeing great statistics. Rafe Mancoon comes on quite a lot on channels like GB News, and he brings up the reality that most of the people that are coming over here that are working for the NHS, for example, or in the care sector, they're bringing 3 to 4 dependents in each one. So there is no financial net benefit or gain to the state whatsoever. And when you talk to these people and you meet them in person, they really know where to go. And people watch GB News, for example, if they live in the UK, they watch GB News, they watch Talk TV, and they bring it leftists on. They entertain these people. And it's just a highlight reel of people who are brain locked, that there's nothing there. They just rabbit out and regurgitate the same old tripe. I mean, the net zero argument, which we'll maybe come on to. I live in a town that has the only oil refinery left in Scotland, right? And we're closing this down completely. We will have no, this is 99% of our oil, diesel and petrol for our stations comes to that refinery. You know where I am. You know this place I'm talking about.
Yeah. I know it very well.
It's the backbone of the country. Now, I was up there making a short film during the demonstrations. Just Stop Oil were up here. And I thought, I'll be a bit clever with the police here. So I typed out the Public Order Act 2023. And as soon as they saw me, they thought, oh, what's going on here? I don't like the look of him. I just don't like the look of him. And I went up and I read this out to the police officer. I said, do you know that when you block the roads and impede the infrastructure of a country, so actually it contravenes the Public Order Act 2023, you can arrest them right now. And he just smiled. The top guy just smiled. And I thought, well, what the hell's going on here? Why can't you actually act on this? 10 minutes later, they did get rid of them. But as a consequence of that, I was actually interviewed by the BBC just momentarily.
It's funny how these things happen.
Yeah. And you should try it sometime. You should try.
Well, I often wonder about this. You know, like if I were at the scene of a crime or something, I just happen to a bystander, and then they come up and I'm going to have to say, like, no, don't interview me. This isn't going to go well for you.
Tonight on Question Time, we have Colin Robertson. We'll let him know.
Just by accident.
Yeah. Oh, my God. So when all this was going on and the cops were unable to disseminate exactly what I was saying, but they got there finally. They just stopped oil people, were moved away. And yeah, the march just continues off onto this creation from Keir Starmer of Marxist pillars. You can listen to the Klaus Schwab rhetoric of the World Economic Forum, and it's basic Marxism, chapter and verse. You will own nothing and be happy, lend inheritance tax. We'll impose inheritance tax on everybody. We'll control the farms, we'll control the foods, we'll take away the resources. We're being asset stripped at pace. So people are...
And this was something that I noted during COVID, that when you tell pubs that they have to close, and a lot of these are small businesses, like family run, whatever, you tell them that they have to close, and then you tell them that they can open again, but then 2 weeks later you tell them they've got to close again. So they've spent money to open up, and now they've done it without the profits for that period of lockdown. Then, you know, so basically it's a very clever roundabout way of bankrupting business or driving them out of business.
Yeah, and during the go back to the COVID era for just a minute, because we did waste our own economy totally, and all these businesses with the $500 billion borrowed by Sunak on the furlough scheme. You know, get perfectly healthy people and healthy businesses for a disease that was only dangerous to 0.1% of the population at best. And there was the narrative to basically bankrupt a country, $14 billion of which that furlough money is still missing, by the way. But that's small beer to the money Keir Starmer's pushing all over the world. That really is small beer. But you could see that the insanity that was clear for the likes of you and I, and I was actually watching some of your stuff. You did some fantastic coverage. And 2020, when all this was kicking off, it was great to see channels like yours actually saying, you know, I agree with those people who are not wearing masks. I didn't wear a mask because I didn't have to wear a mask, and I didn't have to justify to anybody why I didn't have to wear one. And I would actually goad them. I went to a garden centre in Scotland that you probably know, Hopton House, and I saw two old dears in the queue. They'd come together in the car and they were standing together. And this absolute young sort of neo-Nazi wannabe said, "Oh, get apart, you two, please, you'll kill someone." And the two old dears were sort of hanging on to each other. And she wanted them to stand 2 metres apart because of this absolute insanity. And she came to me, and I'm not trying to be the big man or the hero or anything, but I actually love this type of confrontation. I must just be that type of cantankerous Scottish character. And I took her on. I said, "No." She said, "I'll get the manager." I said, "Get who you want." The manager did come up because I was standing, you know, maybe 2 feet away from my girlfriend who was there with me at the time, you know, because I couldn't go spreading my germs onto her now. And the guy said, I said, "Look, you do know that you can get a £10,000 fine if you try to remove me from this place." And he just walked away because he was confronted.
Yeah.
And they don't want the smoke. They don't want the hassle.
No. It's interesting. If you're familiar with this stuff, then you realize that there aren't actually ways around it, ways through it. I didn't get informed on this as soon as I should have, but a lot of it was avoidable. You could just ignore it. What I used to do was just get away with not wearing the mask. I would say I've got medical exemption. And that was it. That was all that you needed to see. But I don't know if that was necessary. I think if you didn't say that, then they could, you know, maybe throw you out. I don't know. But the thing is, it's all based on the assumption that, well, I've got to do what I'm told. I've got to do what they're telling me. I've got to do what they want, because who knows what will happen if I don't. And the truth is, you don't know what will happen if you don't, because ordinary people aren't like that. Ordinary people haven't read the letter of the law. So they're very much acting on a, they're out on a limb, basically.
They are, and sadly we saw the same and we still see the same with the vaccine. And of I have friends and family who have come a cropper, to say the least, after taking these vaccines, and it's never ending, Colin. It's never ending. I've had Dr. Anthony Hinton on the show, which I do recommend for everybody to watch the interviews with Anthony Hinton. He was a regular on Talk TV. But obviously, Anthony was Ofcom regulated. And the kind of information he was telling me just backed up and confirmed the research that I was doing. People were contacting us as a channel. And they were telling us that their family were taking these vaccinations and dying of thrombosis of the brain, massive strokes, 3 or 4 days after. A friend of mine, a close friend of mine, died 4 days after taking the COVID vaccine. And it was unbelievable how the cognitive dissonance really kicked in. And to this day...
It certainly was. I mean, it's faded from my memory now. It's like 3 years on. But at the time, it was like living through a surreal horror film where the population are just brainwashed zombies and you can't reason with them. Hmm. They get angry when you try to. And in the meantime, you're very much feeling apart from everyone else. I mean, it was horrible, horrible time, even for me with my channel and my ways of communicating with large numbers of people. Even I felt like I can't imagine what it must have been like for people without that. It must have been a horrible, horrible time to live through.
Yeah, it was. When you think of, we can all think of occasions where people saw children or grandchildren talking to their grandparents at a window. Elderly people in nursing homes, particularly in Scotland, had no access to their loved ones whatsoever.
And that happened to my family.
Yeah, and God bless them. This wiped out 3 of my family members that were perfectly fine in care homes. They were actually taking them out of the rooms, Colin, and putting them into a dining area. I mean, you couldn't make this up. That in people with infections were being in Scotland. We had 500 people. There was a famous case at Sturgeon, who should be on trial, like so many others. If we had a justice system in this country, she would be. And she was taking people out of homes, as you probably know the story and your viewers will know, and they were going directly in, out of hospital, with infections, going directly into the homes. And Scotland, I think, had the highest COVID death rate in nursing homes of any country of a similar size.
Yeah, I remember this happening, and it was it was notable at the time. Shortly afterwards, of course, there were lots of deaths. I don't know.
Surprise, surprise.
This is what makes me think that the whole thing is sort of sewn up. It's so corrupt that something like this can be done and people aren't on trial. And there's no real, I don't think there's any sign that that will happen in the near future either. I mean, they're just going to get away with it. Fauci, it's known that he lied about this and that, and yet nothing's going to happen to him. And then you've got that guy in Ireland, Luke O'Brien, I can't remember his name. He was just, and then it turned out that he'd been paid by a pharmacy, I think it was Pfizer. Yeah. And I shouldn't say anything that could get me done, because that might be incorrect. I'm not even sure if I got his name right, but I'm sure there was somebody, and it turned out that he was in the pay of Big Pharma, and he was singing the praises of the vaccine, that it was 100% effective. I think Bourla definitely made that claim as 100% effective. And I do remember this Irish guy saying the same thing. And then there were people within Britain, of course. And ordinary people just have to rely on this because they don't know. They don't know any better. And so these experts were free to just say whatever they wanted, whatever their financiers wanted. I mean, it's shocking that none of this there is no scrutiny of this after the, I mean, there should have been scrutiny at the time, but there should definitely be scrutiny after the fact. Whereas the COVID inquiry, which is ostensibly scrutiny, is just a whitewash.
Precisely. And when we had Andrew Bridgen on the show, he had such a treasure trove of information. And we were discussing the Pfizer contract with South Africa. And on that contract, because ours had been redacted completely, it was almost like a black piece of paper with Pfizer at the top. But the one in South Africa was the original copy. And this they did the deal with Pfizer, the South Africans did the deal with Pfizer 6 months after the Brits. And it quite clearly said on that certificate and on that contract that the vaccine would neither stop transmission nor infection, and they had no long-term side effects. Whereas we were told, as you correctly said, idiots like Hillary Jones, who's a Dayglow presenter on Good Morning Britain, he told you that this was safe. He told you it was effective. Matt Hancock did the same. And as Andrew said, he took this information with Professor Andrew Dalglish, who's the leading oncologist in the United Kingdom, amongst others, and many of those that signed the a declaration to go ahead to say that this, they had severe reservations about this. These are experts. These are the real experts. And the Great Barrington Declaration, it's called. And he submitted this to Sir Mark Rowley, head of the Metropolitan Police. Yeah. This was about 9 months ago. Absolutely nothing's happened.
Yeah, yeah. I remember several things like that happening where someone would take something to to a local police station and think that, okay, then it's going to work its way up, or the Met, indeed. And yet nothing ever happens. I don't know what to think. It just feels like and this is how it felt at the time, that systems that you presumed might not, are almost certainly not perfect, but you presume they could be relied upon. There'd be probity, there'd be thoroughness, there'd be a considerable level of integrity. Well, what you found was that they were actually totally corrupt and totally corruptible. And I'm guessing that it was ultimately Bill Gates' money that made that happen. I know he donated money to the BBC, to Channel 4, to various research establishments in Britain. And I think the WEF as well. I mean, that does seem to... And that is a whole thing that it takes us back, that it seemed like there was a power center with the UN, Silicon Valley, and the World Economic Forum, the World Health Organization. It was very much this global governance that superseded national governments. And it was amazing how it did that. Like, 'cause the national governments were just flailing around. They had no idea. And then they were just slavish. And this was it's easy to forget now because it's 4 years ago that this all happened, when it started. But it was really unnerving and frightening because there was a sense that the fabric of the society, the society that you thought you lived in was actually just a simulation, really. And underneath this is that the actual workings of it. It can operate in this way. They can just take away your rights. They can just prevent you from seeing your relatives. They can just shut down your business. And on flimsy evidence, and on evidence that doesn't even make sense to a layman. Even to a layman, it sounds ridiculous. Like, as you say about the masks and the size of the holes. And again, Fauci was on record saying that the masks won't help. And then a week or 2 weeks later, he was saying that they will help. it's incredible. And of course, the big thing that I think most of us discovered during COVID was, aside from all of that, was that 90-95% of the public will just go along with it. And I think that was the really sobering lesson for a lot of people about that.
Well, I spoke to two doctors about this. I had them on the show. an Australian doctor as well that came on, and she was originally, like most of them, like all of them nearly, on board. And there was this groupthink throughout the medical profession, which people are calling into question now. I mean, after the COVID era, if you aren't rethinking everything, and I'm talking everything, including history, what you're told at school, what happened in your favourite bands, what happened in your favourite films, what your favourite, what was the meaning behind all these things, it would make more people explore the themes that you and your guests do, which is the whole collection of what we're doing now. That we're starting to read people like David Icke, they were watching Alex Jones, because they were really going to the other side, the flip side, the dark side, as it's called. And if they can get away with this, this is what you and I definitely know, and your viewers will know, because they're researching this all the time, is if they can get away with this, they'll really stop at nothing. Because as Andrew Bridgen said to us, this really is the greatest crime against humanity that we've ever witnessed. And it's hard to argue with them, Colin.
Well, you know, I've seen people, not in my own life, but I've seen online people who have lost limbs and because of the vaccine. You know, people who were completely healthy, they were fine. They could easily have just taken their chances with COVID like you and I did, like the rest of us did, and they'd now be fine. And instead, they're an invalid for the rest of their life. They've got no leg or no hands. You know, I mean, it's really horrendous what it did to a lot of people. And then as on top of that, you've got the other stuff like strokes and stuff. I'm sure that there must be quite a large number of people who are literally dead now because of the vaccine. As you were saying, in your own life, you've known people who died mysteriously a few days after taking it. One thing that, and this was probably the epitome, like the height of the insanity, was when there was a case of a girl who, I think she had a teenage girl or something, and she had an adverse reaction to the vaccine, and it was all, but they were blaming it on COVID, even though she just had the vaccine, and they were getting her to say, well, this just goes to show, I think she'd had a heart attack or something, something crazy like that. And she was saying, well, this just goes to show how important it is to get vaccinated.
I mean, absolutely.
It was incredible.
It is. And as you say, it's like some sort of dystopian sci-fi film with a script that you'd find it hard to swallow or get by the studio, that people would be so dumb and gullible. And there are a section of my friends that think the way I do, but they don't give a damn about these people anymore. They say, I don't have the energy for you. You call them normies. And I'd probably go along with that term. And it's just that there are none so blind as those who will not see. It's an old saying, but it's a very true one. And a mutual guest or friend of ours, Godfrey Bloom, has really done some incredible research on this. I know Godfrey's coming on very soon, and I look forward to that with bells on. I've had him on maybe 7 or 8 times. He's a fantastic guest and a great guy. And he's all over this because he's a former insurance man. A life insurance is his speciality, and he can crunch the numbers. And he just said, no way. And this is to get onto politics, if I may. This was one of the things that really hacked a lot of people off with Richard Tice and Richard Tice's comments. Originally, he had an interview. There's a famous, infamous interview out there with him and Dr. David Bull, who I've interviewed both of these guys, met them both. And they're actually saying to people that they should, if they're healthcare workers, remember all the healthcare workers, they were ready to jack it in. There were 60,000 of them saying, no, I ain't going to get this. And that should, alarm bell should be ringing when the healthcare workers won't take it and they'd rather go on the dole than take this trial medication. But this is the thing that I spoke to Bull about, but he wouldn't go on the mic about it. But there was somebody very close to him who was actually vaccine harmed and vaccine damaged. Subsequently, he's come out. And, well, not that way. he's come out and said, yeah, these things are harmful. These things are dangerous. And this was the big disappointment for Nigel Farage as well, who, again, I've met, and I just could not believe that he was asking for Tony Blair, war criminal, to be the vaccinator in chief. And that will probably upset a lot of Reform people who are watching your channel. I don't know what sort of demographics you've done.
I don't know. I dare say there are a few Reform voters.
Yeah. But you don't strike me as the type of chap to worry about these things too much.
No, of course not.
The truth be told is that it was a massive howler. And these are the kind of things that all the political parties were saying at the same time. But look, we'll draw a line in the sand under it there, because we've got some time left to talk about other themes. But obviously, it's one for people to remember.
Well, I mean, at this point, the thing to discuss about COVID is the long-term effects. I mean, what do you think, if I say the post-COVID era, what does that mean to you?
I don't think there is one, unfortunately, Colin. If you look around, I still get information sent to me from Australia. They're still testing in care homes, still wearing masks in care homes. And it just depends if you get Nurse Cratchit from the cuckoo's nest. Yeah, you get the reference. I know you're a film buff. And there are people like that within the NHS that are power mad. They can't wait to push their weight and authority over people. And the post-COVID era, I sadly think that it's still here. And the same lunatics, you've seen Patrick Vallance as part of the Keir Starmer cabinet, but he's moved on to net zero. You see, he's just gone from one totalitarian dictatorship theme to another one. It's a perfect transference of skills, isn't it? You can talk crap.
Oh, yeah. Well, this is the thing. A lot of people, it's a mentality, and they would be the same. They'd be doing the same kind of job no matter what political power was in charge at the time. Yeah, they would always be that bureaucrat implementing procedure and checking up on people and so on. So it's a set of skills and a willingness to use them. That gets us to the issue of net zero. Does that not, because as you say, it does, in a lot of ways, COVID seems like a sort of dress rehearsal for things that they might well want to do with regard to climate change. Do you think that they want to do this? What do you think that it is that they want to do? And do you think they're going to be able to do it? So let's start there. What do you think the powers that be want to do regarding climate change?
Well, again, it's the back to the science. And that's a great two-part question, if you don't mind me saying, because where do they want to finally take us? Where does this end? And it's clear to see what they're doing right now. They're scuppering our country. They're making us absolutely defenseless with these empty promises, the projections that they have. You see, I mean, it is almost like watching the Fast Show when you see Ed Miliband out there next to the windmills and he's talking absolute bollocks with no scientific evidence backing him up. As I've said to these people, I've met them because there are a few where I live and I come into contact with them. As long as human beings are here on this planet and animals, you cannot and should not remove CO2. It's hard to go anywhere from there because you're bringing in an abundance of evidence to these people. As I said to you before, if you don't want anything to do with fossil fuels, you're writing off plastic, you're writing off roads, you're writing off concrete, you're writing off pharmaceutical products. You cannot survive without fossil fuels. Now, there's a clean way of doing this, which is being done in other countries. And when you look at BRICS, for example, all the BRICS nations, Brazil, Russia, India, China, and South Africa, they are all fossil fuel based. And you see the GDP growth. I look at these stats and you need oil, you need gas, you need coal. There are clean ways that you can do it. They're not interested, Colin. It's about control. And truth be told, it's about depopulation. The most rampant net zero people like Boris Johnson and his father are also eugenicists. They've written about this in their books. The father's book, The Virus, speaks for itself. We've all heard the clips of them saying that the population of the UK would be better at 12 million. Well, that's rich for someone that's got an open borders policy as well and an amnesty for illegal migration.
Yeah.
I mean, I see it going in a continual slide. People aren't complying. They're not buying the e-cars. When you look at the e-car sales and their inefficiency, the sales are propped up by local authorities. You'll maybe see it in the large city that you live in, where all the vehicles say, we are proudly 100% E. You're proudly 100% stupid. And they've got the little green label, haven't they, on the registration, just to let you know they're that little bit more virtuous than the likes of you and I. it's case closed. And if anybody buys one of these things, really, they need to give their head a little shake, because they're inefficient, they're expensive. The life cycle on them is very, very short, and they take a hell of a long time to recharge. I don't know if you've ever driven one, but it's not a nice driving experience either. It's quite flat.
So I guess the most important thing here is that it's a notion, it's an idea, a project that to save the environment by reducing carbon, supposedly. Now, let's go along with that notion. Do you think that the byproduct of that, if you were to implement that successfully, it would? Do you think that would be a sustainable or pleasant society? Or, I mean, if they're going to do this, what's it going to do to life as you and I know it?
Well, it's going to make it miserable. It's going to take it away. Your independence will be removed. Your freedom to travel will be removed. You've seen this in cities years gone by. I worked in Cambridge, and even back then, when I think about it, must be nearly 20 years ago now when I worked there, they still had the low emission zones back then. They have the bollards that are raised up out the ground. I don't know if you've been to Cambridge, but they have so many restrictions. A beautiful place, historic, beautiful architecture, lovely little shops and tea rooms, etc., etc. But they had gone down this green road, like most Marxists that have gone to Cambridge or Oxford. They love this stuff because it's a way of imposing their will and control using the same bureaucratic narrative of follow the science. The 20 cities, the 15-minute cities that Sadiq Khan's so heavily involved with, all these London mayors are so heavily involved with, are being rolled out. Remember, there was an interview last year when Angela Rayner, before Labour came into power, said, we will have a ULEZ, a low emission zone, UK. It's going to happen. And I got involved with the Blade Runner movement. I think I coined the phrase, Herd Immunity News, we coined that phrase, Blade Runner. We're going to take that. That was us.
Right, okay.
The first Blade, obviously I'm not Ridley Scott, and I didn't write the...
No, of course not.
I didn't write the script. But I coined that phrase. I was the first one to use it because I had friends who lived in a certain part of England that were, shall we say, noticing that these cameras were being clipped. So this is the rebellious side of Brits that will do things like that. Now, obviously, you and I are both publicly going to, you know, we're going to speak out against such criminal acts, especially publicly.
Of course.
You know, you naughty people, now, come. Don't do these things. Follow Sir Sadiq's guidance and get an e-bike.
Yes, of course. I fully endorse that message.
Yeah, we may even get sponsorship for next year.
From Bill Gates.
Oh, I was thinking of the tagline was on E. .. bike. Now, woes on E, on an e-bike, now, that would be a series.
Yeah, well, I nearly did that once, actually, oddly enough. Before COVID, I was really seriously thinking about doing a tour around England, southern England, on a bike. It was going to be like an electric bike. And but I didn't do it in the end, partly because COVID happened. And that's a bummer. But anyway, just to, as an aside there, I did nearly... There nearly was a series.
You were going to do a walking tour. Sorry to interrupt, but I remember you saying you were going to do a walking tour.
Yeah, that was it. And then I thought, well, actually, it'd be better with a bike because to get up and just be more, just be a better way to do it. But yeah, it was the same thing. And I really do regret not doing that. But there we go. It's just one of those things. So to get back to the net zero thing.
Yeah.
Oh, I agree with you that it would be a miserable life, miserable society. But I also think they're probably not going to be able to do this. And part of it is that just one sign of this is that the electric cars are not selling. As far as I know, they're really struggling to get people to buy into this. And also it just costs so much. I mean, not just that, in other ways as well. It's more expensive to go the carbon neutral route.
Well, if there are no oil refineries and that's all you have, because remember, you're throwing in the social credit score and the central banking digital currency as well into the mix. So the scenario is that you and I have just got enough money to buy an e-car or an e-bike. And that's subject to power cuts, which Ed Miliband's already speaking about, will happen. That's just part of the reality of saving the planet. So if there are no petrol stations, you do kind of sit back and think of a Mad Max-like scenario where you've got people out in the Highlands that maybe have a stash of diesel. And you've got all these bikers that you see that normally go into the Green Welly, which is a well-used and loved cafe by all these middle-aged accountants with their Harley Davidsons. You could see them reenacting this out in the Highlands, trying to track down someone with a lawnmower with a bit of diesel in it. And it gets silly and we're laughing just because it's coming. But you're right, there will be a lot of pushback for it. More people are awaking. They're watching excellent channels like yours and to a certain degree channels like mine, if we get the right guests on, the experts to come on to debunk this crap. And more power to them. There are great people doing it all the time. Most of the political parties that the sort of politicians I interview, Colin, like Reform, UKIP, Heritage Party, they're all completely against net zero. And that just has to, we have to unite against this. We have to not be tempted and buy an e-bike. I won't be very pleased if I hear that you are on an e-bike, sir.
I meant an electric bike. It's something that goes back years, I'm sure. I didn't mean like...
Well, the fire hazards. Was one of them not thought of being the culprit during the sad deaths in... what was it called? That tower that went on fire again with the poor cladding. It's gone out of my mind for a second.
Oh, God. Grenfell.
Grenfell, yeah. We don't want that happening again now.
No, certainly not. This is the you touched on it there, the absolute absurdity of all this, that they want people to go electric and so oil's out, but then we don't have the capacity. And I don't know what the position is on nuclear power stations. I don't know what is that bad. I know that Germany has shut down all of its nuclear power stations. I think it just did close the last one a few months ago. So then how the hell are you going to get all this electricity? I mean, this seems like maybe there's something that I'm just missing that I'm ignorant of, but it seems like a massive hole in the massive flaw in the plan, as it were.
But the plan isn't maybe the one that you're thinking of. The plan is for us to have no access to vehicles unless you're in the elite or those that can afford them, because you're completely controlled in that scenario. You're not going to move out your town. But I'm noticing this behavior already, that people are sticking within their own zone because they cannot afford the fuel. And they maybe don't want to go to those towns that we were discussing earlier on. Beautiful historic towns now aren't getting the same passing trade as they once did. The high streets are all dilapidated. Everybody's
going. This is something that I see a lot, that it seems to have, and again, let's get back to COVID. It really seems that after COVID, things have not returned to the way they were. And part of it is that people just don't seem to go out anymore. Even as you say, to something like that, I visited for the first time in my life a few months ago. I visited St. Andrews and it was really nice, but it wasn't nearly as, it was a nice day. I think it was a Saturday. I can't remember. But anyway, the point is, it wasn't nearly as busy as I would have expected it to be. And I thought, my God, when I was here in similar places, I remember going to Peebles and so on, these equivalent historic cute villages around Scotland. When I did that when I was a child, they were heaving with people. And here I am in St. Andrews, which is internationally famous. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of, it's not dead, but it's, you know, middling. And it seemed significant. The same thing in Amsterdam last year. Mm-hmm. I was in Amsterdam around July last year for a few days, and it was busy. But I remember just thinking there was something intangible. There was something different compared to the before times, before 2020, there was a certain tone, a certain attitude among these people on the streets, the party goers, club goers. Everything just seems more, I don't know, hesitant now, low key, slower, and not in a good way, not in a sort of leisurely, relaxed way, but rather like, everyone's a bit frightened nowadays.
Hmm.
And I really do think that COVID has done a number on the West.
It's a constant barrage of all of these things at once. I mean, there's you. You're a chap who watches the news. You keep abreast of political affairs and current affairs. But with the news cycle, it's just a constant random access memory. It's right at the front. It's right here. You know, what is the latest thing for our side of the political spectrum to look at? And it's just constantly there are topics coming up, but the theme is the same. It's technocratic, it's bureaucratic, the science behind it is bullshit. And you're mentioning Amsterdam, a place I've frequented a few times, and it's very difficult to stay in Europe and look around and feel safe, feel comfortable. I did a postgraduate course over in Stockholm back in the mid-90s. And everybody thinks the mid-90s, it was a cool time. It was kind of acid house music coming out, Blur and Oasis were coming. You would be a teenager, I guess, at that period. So you would be engaged with everything that was going on.
I was, yeah. It was fun. It was really fun, yeah.
Yeah, there were great times, and I've heard you talking in lovingly and glowingly about 80s America, you know, that sort of Die Hard 2 when you have Morgoth on. you go on a kind of binge of all these great stories, and it was a beautiful time. But now when you go over and you look at these places, they're barely recognisable. And demographics is obviously a massive part of this cultural denigration and cultural shift. I chat with, I have a guy on, a really good freelance journalist called Dave Atherton, and he's a great man for the statistics. He's on Talk TV now and again, and he's on the Lotus Eaters and podcasts like that. And he has a great, voluminous knowledge of the, I'm trying to put this the most polite way, but the changes that happen criminally, the statistics that Rupert Lowe is after at the moment, for migrant crimes, right, which we absolutely need the statistics on. If you have a migrant centre down the road from you, you're not saying they're sinners, you're not saying they're saints, but you are entitled to know if your family are safe or not. I mean, I don't know if that plays into your feelings when you go to Europe and you see these places.
Well, that's part of it. That's part of it. That they're just not the same demographics as before, but and that has increased since COVID and that period, that 4-year period. Also, COVID itself, I think that just was like a body blow. I think it just made people more fearful and more hesitant, and also more homebodies. And I say that ironically because I am very much a homebody, but you know, I can see that most people never used to be. Socializing was a big thing, even for me. You know, I went out to clubs and bars and pubs and all that. Even that seems to be less of a thing now. I mean, something I noticed is that you go to an event now, and people don't hang around afterwards. They just, like, the event happens and then they go home immediately. Whereas 20 years ago, they'd go to a pub afterwards, and then they'd go to another pub, and then they'd maybe go to a nightclub. Everything is much more compartmentalized now. So that's another part of it. I think that just the internet has made people more agoraphobic, I guess. That's part of it. The social pressure to adhere to rules, which again came with COVID, I think that's sort of taking the life out of socializing, revelry and all that. But then on top of that, you've now got the scare stories like this kind of thing. I believe this is genuine. What can you do but laugh?
God almighty. They're burning to death out there. It's 20 degrees.
And like, this is the sort of thing. I believe this image is genuine. If it's not, I'm sorry, but it at least communicates a point. That this kind of thing seems to be... Here's another one. That, this is a bit more comedic, but...
Yeah, it's hot.
Yeah, exactly. So this is the reframing of weather, which once upon a time was perfectly ordinary, as like an Armageddon sort of event.
It's the surface of the sun, really, isn't it, that we're living on?
Yeah.
You talk about milking it.
Oh, I think we might have lost his connect. Oh, hello?
Yep, I can hear you.
Ah, you're back. You just froze for a few seconds. Sorry about that.
Yeah, I was global boiling. Sorry.
Well, this is the thing. I mean, this is where it might be going, where climate change becomes this, like COVID was, where they're constantly recycling and stretching it out and reusing it and applying it to different things. So as to, and they're already doing that. I don't know how far this is going to go. The thing is, I do think it relies on prosperity, on people being wealthy enough to care about such things, because otherwise you're just not going to. And so then in order to make people follow these rules, adhere to all of this, you've got to use authoritarianism. So then you've got a poor, and this is the kind of thing that I could see Keir Starmer being in charge of. This is the kind of society that I could see. Like, this is why they've chosen Keir Starmer to be in charge of the Labour Party, because, and thus the Prime Minister, because they need someone who will be as cold and ruthless and efficient as he seems to be. I'll leave it at that.
No, absolutely. And you look at the type of personalities we were talking about earlier on before. He almost looks like a Mancunian candidate, doesn't he? He's maybe gone through a traumatic episode in his childhood, and he has been formulated. They're all grown in petri dishes. The Greta Thunbergs, the Rishi Sunaks, we've got Kemi Badenoch, all in the young Macron, Justin Trudeau,
the New Zealand woman.
Ardern. And then they get plum jobs afterwards. They get these, like Operation Earthshot. They get to work with... Prince Willie. And you couldn't make this up. You really couldn't. And It's sickening to see. It's sad to see. But I'm hopeful that more people will get it. And this maybe opens up the doorway to talk about Donald Trump, if you want to.
Yeah, certainly. Go ahead, yeah.
Because this was a bit of a fist pump moment. And I know there'll be people out there saying he's owned, he's controlled. But he's a damn sight better than Kamala Harris. He's a damn sight better than Joe Biden. Is he part of the scheme and the gang? Yes. But are there factions to these gangs, clubs, secret societies that are more benevolent and not malevolent? And I think there are. I've met people from these clubs and secret societies that people talk about at night and hushed alleyways. And some of them are nice people. They're decent people. They have patriotic tendencies and inclinations. But then there's the other side that are completely psychopathic. You'll get Godfrey Bloom coming on your show, the great Godders. And he said most of the politicians he's met in his career are sociopaths. It's hard to argue against it, Colin.
Yeah, he's said that to me as well. I think that generally is what it takes to get ahead in a system that is, you know, corrupt and is dog eat dog. You have to be a piece of shit. You know, you have to be someone who just really doesn't have convictions. You'll just do whatever is required to get ahead.
Absolutely. And it's funny, during the Andrew Bridgen interview, he said he was approached by a senior Tory household name that agreed with him on the fact that these vaccines were deadly and they would kill hundreds of thousands of people. But he said, you've screwed your political career and you should leave it there and say no more, even though you know the damage it's doing. Many people have known about this stuff for years, and I don't know if it's boring to them now. And maybe they're just like, I mean, do you have much sympathy or care or compassion if somebody tells you they're going for the sixth jab?
No, you've just got to write that person off at this point. I mean, life's too short. Well, especially if you're vaccinated.
Okay. Well, yeah. I'm not laughing. But,
gallows humor. But yes. My point is that you've got to conserve your empathy and your emotional resources, because it will just be wasted on people. And you'll run yourself ragged trying to talk sense into them. And what's the point?
But sorry, back on to Trump. I digressed that line. I do apologise. But there is a sort of glimmer of hope that things won't be as bad. I mean, that they won't be as bad as they would have been under a continuation of the Kamala Harris, the neocons, the endless warring. We're looking for answers in Ukraine. We're looking for peace in Ukraine. The end of the NATO EU expansion program, which was what it was all about. Basically, Trump, on the front of it, seems to be looking to pull away from this, certainly allowing the EU to expand. Its implications for China as well, because this has a massive detrimental effect to the Belt and Road Initiative, which I'm sure you're aware of, that the Chinese are running throughout the world.
Yes.
The brakes are going on. Trump's putting the brakes on the Chagos Island deal, which you still see clowns like Tobias Elwood on the GB News Talk TV. He's another disinformation specialist, the 77th Brigader, saying that this is a great deal. The Americans are happy. Those aren't the droids you're looking for. I mean, it's comedy.
Yeah, yeah. Well, there's a great deal of absurdity there, but I do agree with you that on the face of it, Trump is better. And I mean, we've had 4 years of, it's just been surreal with Joe Biden and Kamala Harris. And yeah, I think at any rate, I think he'll slow things down. That's what I expect of Trump. I think he did that the first time round, and I think he'll probably do it the second time. How great it will be is a different matter. We're just going to have to wait and see. I was excited about something he'd said about online censorship and banning that. Mm. And then I realized it was community noted, and I realized that it was actually from 2022. It was 2 years ago. So it wasn't when he was like at post winning this election, where he wasn't sort of laying out what he's going to do. It was something propositional 2 years earlier. So I don't know whether he's going to do that or not. But one thing you did want to touch on, I guess there's time for us to go into that, is the future of social media platforms, in particular for the likes of us. Let's go into that, and then we can go to the super chats.
Well, under I treat the Elon Musk takeover of X as a good thing, as a better scenario than what we had. I lost maybe 5,000 followers. We've got about 54,000 followers on X now. And for a channel that doesn't do well on YouTube because of the COVID content and our political content as well, that there does seem to be, even in YouTube, and I've heard you talk about this, there does seem to be a sort of armistice in the right wing. And if all goes well, I'm hoping to maybe take some of our footage and put it back up, because I know that they ruthlessly they've got a hard on for you, and they don't want you back on. But I saw that Godfrey Bloom, our dear friend, had put you back on. I don't know if you know that.
I know that he put it up last year, his millennial, and then they took it down. I don't know if has he got it restored.
Well, I believe he did. And right. I mean, with your permission, I would like to do the same.
But just be aware that it might lead to a channel strike.
Honestly, well, the most viewed video interview we've done had 650,000 views on X. This was with Saddam Hussein's former lawyer, Giovanni Di Stefano. And it just because it went everywhere in Italy's, he's very well known, the Middle East as well. The subject was on Gaza in the Middle East, so it was a popular show. The same video on our YouTube channel got 86 views. 86 wow. to 650,000. So we are shadow banned to buggery.
And that's amazing, isn't it? I mean, that could be just to do with the different nature of different social platforms, but it sounds more likely that it's about, as you say, being shadow banned to buggery. I mean, that's incredible. Is it consistently like that, where your videos get far fewer views on YouTube?
100%. Right. We average between, I mean, if you get Godfrey, Andrew Bridgen, Ben Habib on, those guys will get you 50, 60, 70, 80,000 views. And then we chop them up and put out the tastiest little tidbits. And on YouTube, the only people that are popular with us are Ben Habib and Nick Tenconi. Seems to get a shed load of views, the UKIP leader. And maybe it's just two bald guys on a screen together. They think it's a Right Said Fred tribute act. That joke has been made several times. But I like the way you do things. You're obviously a very tech savvy individual. And you have Rumble, you're on BitChute. You've covered your bases. But I mean, as far as you're concerned, I have seen you growing on it on X when you were re-established, which was a fantastic thing. And I've also heard you commenting to say X has to get the sort of super chat side of things going on as well. So that can be incorporated. And that's what I've heard. Well, excuse me, that's going to happen next year.
Right, good.
So the future's right for the dissident right.
Yeah, I think so too. I mean, I haven't done any numbers, but I've looked here and there at how much is going on each platform now and then. Mm. And like this one's got 950 on X, on Twitter. Right. Odyssey right now is glitching, so it's screwed. I don't know what's going on there with that stream. And then Rumble, I can tell you what's there, but it won't be as much as on Twitter.
Sure.
So there's, I really hope, right, it's 270 on Rumble, and then probably a small number on Telegram, 3. So not many on Telegram. But clearly X already is, for this at least, for Millennial, is the premier video live streaming website. I mean, I could try Twitch, but I don't think I would last long on there. It doesn't tend to be friendly to people like us. So so that's it. So X already is the sort of future of this. And they haven't even done much yet to optimize it for videos.
Well, it's changing the game as well politically. That's for the, if we're looking at one side, how it is for us, it will allow us to expand our businesses, our viewership. We'll diversify. Because we've made contact with each other, there's every possibility of people that I've had on my show, and this happens a lot, I'm sure it's happened to you, they'll contact you and say, Woz, could you get me in touch with Morgoth, or could you get me in touch with Jared Taylor? Or,
yeah, it happens a lot, yeah.
Yeah, and I get that too. There's a lot of people who I really like, and I've had on my show, and they would like to see Ben Habib on their show, because he is a high-profile politician of the right, and he's very accommodating, and he's a brave guy. He will take a chance. I was so proud when I saw Godfrey on your platform, because I thought that's really a bit of a coup for you, because that's somebody from mainstream politics. And I don't mean that disrespectfully.
No, I understand and I agree. I mean, I thought the same. I contacted him on a whim, assuming that he would say no. But he said yes. And I said to him, say to him, like, are you sure? Because I'm quite controversial. And he said, controversial's my middle name.
Right up his alley, dear boy. Yeah. Right up his alley. And the UK column, UK column guys as well, are fantastic. And I know they're coming back on. But they are great guys. I've admired a lot personally. And it's great to have them on the show. And I think that's going to play well for you, because I don't know if I'm – you've got a different set of viewers and listeners to me. You've built yours up over, my God, 10 years plus.
Yeah, it's 10 years now, yeah.
And I would recommend to anybody, any of our viewers, when we'll clip this and put this out, to go through your back catalogue. I mean, it's talk about a voyage of someone's agony, pain, stress. You name it. It's an incredible period piece to look back on, because you're commenting on your situation, but also the politics of the day. So the social media lets them really get a massive insight into you as an individual, regardless of what they've read in the Daily Bloody Record.
Definitely, yeah.
You're a nice guy. You're a warm-hearted person.
If you went by the mainstream media, you'd think that I was a complete piece of shit. You'd think that I was a dreadful person. And same with Wikipedia as well. But I really think I'm not. I mean, if you disagree with me, sure. Like my points, my beliefs, whatever. Sure. But don't try to get me to believe that I'm a piece of shit. I know I'm not. So it's ridiculous when it is frustrating. When I see the mainstream media, I think this must be the case for many people. When you see yourself being so grossly misrepresented, it's frustrating. Unfortunately, for now, they still have the power to do that. But another 10 years or so, I think they'll be much less able to do that kind of thing, I think.
But social media is taking over massively. And I was speaking to one of my guests the other day about the 70,000, you know, 50,000, 60,000 views again on X. And he said, that's more than Sky. You're pissing on Sky TV.
Yeah.
You're pissing on Emily Maitlis's head.
Yes.
You're destroying Laura Cheeseburger, as God could call it.
And it's great, isn't it? It's fun.
It's great. I mean, it's really nice. And Woz, if you were to come out to these little rallies and things like that, I'm sure you would get a lot of love. I'm sure you would. I don't know if you're around in February to the rally. A friend of mine's hosting Ben Habib in London. And I'd certainly give you a shout out to come along as well. David Vance.
Oh, yes. I'm familiar. I've never been in contact with him, but I'm familiar with him, yeah.
But all these people would embrace you like a brother. Because you are. You are our brother. You're flesh and blood.
Well, thank you. It's very kind of you to say that. Yeah, I mean, obviously I want to be in contact with people. I think it's just generally a good idea, especially in our line of work. I think it's a very good idea to, you know, be as connected as you can be. And that doesn't mean having 1,000 friends, but it means being connected. So you are acquainted with people so that if you need them, you can call upon them and vice versa. I mean, this is why I always tell people, fall out with as few people as you possibly can.
Yeah, don't burn the bridges. But look at the people on GB News. I know you want to talk about other things, but just very quickly, Lawrence Fox, Dan Wooten, Mark Steen, even Neil Oliver. I've made contact, met up with the great Neil Oliver, the unofficial King of Scotland, who's a fantastic bloke. And some of the things I've said are very controversial. Some of the views that I've had on are very similar to your own. And, but we don't really give a damn for these people. It's not an insult to be hated by a cretin, Colin.
No. Well, this is the thing. It used to be the case that people could have differing views. Again, to go back to the 90s, to reminisce. And yeah, people were just much less politically uptight then than they have been in recent years. I would like to see a return to a more sane sort of tone to the discourse and to everyday conversation. I think it's almost a shame when life does get this political, where ordinary people who shouldn't really need to be bothered with this stuff are instead at each other's throats over which party you vote for or what your political views are. It's kind of funny to say this, given who you and I are, that we are so involved in this, in politics, political thought, and so on. But I do think that it's better for most people if they're less political, because it does have this poisoning effect on people. Odyssey, I'm afraid, I think it's still frozen. I think it's still glitchy. Let me have a look again at the stream just to see if I can get it. Oh, there it is. It's back. Right, good. Thank God for that. Right. Okay. So there was one jokey super chat again from conservatives saying, did you know that the Dems are the real racists? Thank you for that. Always helpful to remind yourself of that. Thank you. That's great. I don't know if there's anything else that we should bring up before we wrap up. I would just say thank you for coming on. I'm sorry that we couldn't do it last year. I'm glad to be in contact with you now, and I hope we stay in touch. I think it's nice to speak to us fellow Scot. I've got to say, especially someone who is from close by, from where I came from, because as I say, this can be quite an alienating thing to be in. So it's nice to hear an accent that I recognise.
Well, absolutely, and I'd like to get you onto Herd Immunity News. I did kind of pursue you a little bit last year when I was in London doing the Blade Runner stuff, but you're very busy, which I appreciate. But I was getting all these input from all these people on the ULEZ madness and insanity. And it's great to make contact with other fellow content creators from the right. And hopefully 2025 is going to be a fantastic year. And I just say Merry Christmas to everyone. And keep watching Millennial Wars
and Herd Immunity News. Thank you very much. I've really enjoyed this one. It's been good. I'll be back in about 10 minutes with Blackpilled. But in the meantime, I hope you've enjoyed this one. Mark, thank you for appearing on Millennial X.
God bless, Colin.
Okay. Thank you. I'll see you all later.
We hope you're enjoying Millennial. The festival goes on, but how about giving something back to your tireless host? There are many ways to make a cash donation. Find all of these at millennial.com/donate. Your kindness will be warmly appreciated. Millennial amounts to 3 months of work for the vile vlogger. Please help him to keep the lights on.